But back in the 19th century, Quebec was a, and French Canada was a rural society. Everyone was piously Roman Catholic. Higher education was limited to preparing men to be priests, lawyers, and doctors, and science was hardly studied at all. We know science. We know science as the product of the scientific method based on hypotheses tested by observation. But even this idea was not accepted by folk in Quebec altogether. François-Xavier Bourque wrote an article entitled "The First and Most Profound of Scholars, Adam, Our First Father." Adam knew everything.
Oh, something's going to
It's automatically advancing if you shouldn't. Adam knew everything, and God made him in his own image and made him perfect. And so Adam had knowledge of everything, including everything we know as science. And he passed this knowledge on to the patriarchs, who in turn spread it among all of the ancient cultures, who knew that, who knew science, as we can tell by looking at their works, like the pyramids of Egypt. Nevertheless, Bourque accepted the current understanding of the origin and history of the world, which was largely put forward by the atheist scientist Laplace. Evolution, on the other hand, was an idea put forward by enemies of God and the church. They want, they do, that our first father was an orangutan. Well, let they be always withered and dishonored. An orangutan beside Adam? An orangutan beside Adam?
Sure, just that for you.
Look at that hideous animal.
So
this hideous animal whose roars freeze the blood in our veins. So this was an idea then. More current in our mind was the work of Abbé Léon Provencher. Provencher established a journal, Le Naturaliste Canadien, in which he sought to promote knowledge of natural science in Quebec, particularly for the purpose of agriculture, and he devoted a lot of time to a space to insects, which are a problem in agriculture. And
are you doing that at all?
No.
The clicker wasn't working.
So the clicker is off. I'll turn it off.
So Provencher, yeah, here we are. Here's Abbé Provencher. And he said, geology goes down into the bowels of the earth, where we can read about the past of the world. Revelation comes to us from on high and teaches us to count on the future life, which will remain after all things of this world have passed on. Geology and revelation, he said, must be in accord, because it is God himself who has spoken to us through these two voices. But students can make mistakes in their investigations, and from those come contradictions. Yeah, here he said this. So the next one, is it going to work now? Do you think? Good, wonderful.
I hesitate to say.
So, Provencher considered the earth could well be old, maybe millions of years. He gave six reasons why Noah's flood only extended over the inhabited part of the earth. Yet he too was very negative about evolution. And he wrote, "And Darwin's natural selection, what absurdities hasn't it drawn? Numerous of thinkers and observers, even serious ones." So this was the thought in the 19th century. Evolution was considered very negatively. Some years later, Dr. Albert Laurendeau, who was a leader in the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Quebec, printed a tract entitled Life, Biological Considerations. And in this tract, Laurendeau said, "Truth resides in the evolution of Lamarck, Darwin, and the host of scholars who have placed this doctrine on a solid foundation." This idea drew the wrath of the diocesan bishop, who forced Laurendeau to confess that his tract contained serious errors and that he accepted the teachings of his church. And publication of this tract was delayed for 98 years. The educator who had the largest influence on modernizing science in Quebec was Brother Marie Victorin. He studied a modern secondary school curriculum in the Commercial Academy of Quebec. He also became fascinated by science by visiting the laboratory in the convent school his sisters went to. At age 16, Brother Marie Victorin committed himself to be a brother of the Christian schools and prepared to become a schoolmaster, a career he started less than 2 years later at age 17 and continued at the Collège de Longueuil. There, his principal interest was botany, and he did field work first in the region around Longueuil and later in more remote parts of Quebec. He published many articles on the plant life of Quebec and one book. He found a novelty, this hybrid loosestrife, a different thing from either of its considered parents on the right and left. And he considered that these changes in living things could not be the result of Darwinian evolution, but rather the result of larger change or mutation. And this was a scientific idea current in the time due to De Vries. And so commenting on this, he again wrote negative things about Darwinism. Darwinism finds itself thus undermined in its basis indeed. Furthermore, this scientific doctrine, which has been made in the last 50 years, perhaps against the will of its author, into a war machine against old God and his encumbrance morality. It has been crushed as much under the blows of its most ardent chorus members, Haeckel and his school, as under the experiments of the Austrian monk, referring to Gregor Mendel. However, Marie Victorin tried to broaden his knowledge and made contact with university botanists. Professor Francis Lloyd of McGill suggested that he reads a somewhat open-minded book, a treatise on thermatology. And Marie Victorin read it and wrote in his journal, "This is a most learned work. The author is evolutionist, but often brings forward very strong arguments against the general thesis of evolution." So his ideas then were being broadened. Professor Fernald of Harvard was an expert in biogeography, and he encouraged Marie-Victorin to understand the dynamics of ecosystems and how there is constant change. In 1920, the University of Montreal was established, and Marie-Victorin was called to become its first professor of botany, even though he himself had never attended a university and had no university degree. There, he vigorously promoted education in science, and he saw this as essential for empowering French Canadians to take control of their own resources, which at the time were being exploited for the benefit of outsiders and for English speakers. At this time, respected Roman Catholic writers were writing favorably about evolution. The Belgian canon Henri de Dorlodot argued that the dogmas of recently pronounced by Pope Leo XIII were entirely consistent with evolutionary thought. And the French Jesuit Pierre Teilhard de Chardin wrote about human origins, and he said, God doesn't so much make things as he makes them make themselves. So, Marie-Victorin became convinced that evolution is valid science. And he was now writing that we need to adopt the modus vivendi, the way of living of the enlightened countries, to let science and religion go along by parallel roads towards their own goals, to continue to adore God in spirit and in truth, but to let the biologists work peacefully in the shelter of their laboratories, an idea which anticipates the non-overlapping magisteria concept of Stephen Gould of the 1990s. Marie-Victorin rejected the concept of Concordism, which is another name really for the day-age theory. He asserted that Homo sapiens is the divinely spiritualized end result of a long directed evolution on a privileged planet called Earth. And so this is a following Teilhard de Chardin, and in contrast to Darwin, who did not consider evolution to be directed to any goal. Marie-Victorin criticized the thought of a young Earth and said the 4,004 years of history of the Earth is an indestructible remnant of the fantasy of a chronology of Usher, and which is still dragged into the majority of our manuals of religious education. Nevertheless, his ideas on evolution were questioned by other educators. One was Mother Marie des Anges, who founded the first college, the first classical college for young women in Quebec City. She questioned Marie-Victorin, and he replied that there are many things able to calm the conscience of a student tortured by too narrow thinking. And he cited the works of Dorlodot and Teilhard de Chardin, among others. Marie-Victorin was strengthened in his views by travel. In 1929, he went to Kenya, and he observed archaeological work that is altogether going to change our ideas on the origin of man. I have seen with my own eyes, he said, the excavations, the skeletons, the cultural relics, and Homo sapiens could be 500,000 years old. Toronto was a place you could go to see glacial and interglacial deposits. 1933, he had an extremely interesting time as a naturalist in British Columbia. And here you also honor divinity, theology, and piety. Marie-Victorin used the Darwinian concept of struggle for life and related it to political and social and educational structures which could only survive if they were responsive to society's needs. And he used the same idea in a spiritual purpose, recalling an incident which happened in his childhood. When he was a little boy, his grandparents let him grow a miniature farm on the house embankment. And as the crops matured, he was hoping for a harvest, but just before it, a clumsy cousin let his mare loose, and she gobbled up all of the crops in four gulps. But Marie-Victorin used this years later in a story to affirm the need to be persistent in ministry. And he wrote, along the road of life, I have many a time seen blind chance, a stupid accident, ruin in one moment hopes which had been built up with much trouble. And every time on the morrow of these disasters, I have been tempted to say to myself, it does not do to sow on the house embankment. And along the roadway of life, I have many times sown the best of my mind and spirit in the hearts of pupils and friends whom I believe to be sincere and steadfast. And many times also with the passing of the days, I have seen those hearts shut themselves up and the face harden as it were under a stranger's mask. But because the Christ has set no bounds to his divine precept to love our fellow man, our brother, I have said to myself, in spite of all, I will sow on the embankment. That translation is due to James Ferris, who translated the book Marie-Victorin wrote. In 1941, Marie-Victorin began a series of radio broadcasts on botany. And in them, he linked science with faith. And a broadcast in 1943, The Tree and Man, he captured his hearer's interest by comparing trees and people. Both of them breathe and feed and drink and make love. And his final points pointed to morality and faith. And so now we'll see what we can do.
S'il ne peut nous initier au mystère de son origine et de sa divinité, la vie de l'art apporte aux hommes un message qu'il leur faut entendre et sans quoi le tableau du monde où l'arbre tient tant de place serait sans signification et sans voix. Oui, il y a une impressionnante analogie humaine dans la considération de l'arbre. Comme nous, l'arbre respire et, lentement, diffuse sa matière dans l'air ambiant. Comme nous, il s'annexe sans trêve des éléments de la matière. Et comme nous, il a besoin du secours à chaque minute de cette fidèle gardienne de la vie, l'eau. Comme nous, l'arbre dort, quelquefois en repliant ses feuilles comme on ramène une couverture sur sa tête. Comme nous, pour ne pas mourir tout entier, il assure la continuité de son espèce par un acte d'amour entouré d'un infini déploiement de couleurs et de parfums. Comme nous, plus que nous, l'arbre a une patrie, un sol natal, et il supporte mal l'exil. Comme chez les humains, l'arbre soutient son frère dans la forêt. Mais les arbres se livrent aussi parfois des luttes fratricides, et la forêt est pleine d'implacable suppression, le silencieux triomphe du fort sur le faible. Enfin, comme nous aussi, l'arbre ayant atteint le nombre de ses jours, disparaît et retourne à la terre, pendant que, folle de sève, la génération suivante monte vers le soleil. L'arbre est donc bien pour nous un grand frère muet, impuissant à nous dire cependant le poème de sa vie intérieure et formidable. Nous l'aimons tel quel, ce frère muet, venu de plus loin que nous, dans les abîmes du passé, mûri dans son immobilité et son silence. S'il ne peut nous initier au mystère de son origine et de sa divinité, il peut, en revanche, sans rompre son auguste silence, nous apprendre à nous tenir droit, à chercher une hauteur, à raciner profondément, à purifier le monde, à offrir généreusement à tous l'ombre et l'abri. Ainsi, l'arbre est la vérité parce qu'il est l'ordre et la continuité. Il est la beauté parce qu'il émeut en nous des fibres qui tremblent tout au fond du grand creuset révolu, d'où sortir des mains de Dieu les deux œuvres de foi, l'arbre et l'homme.
So some concluding thoughts. When we're talking about science, we need to emphasize the scientific method. Oftentimes, people jump in and start to talk about quarks or other things, but why do we know this? It does not come just from authority, but from the scientific method. Building bridges and not perhaps jumping in controversially at the beginning and antagonizing people, but linking them to something which builds a bridge, like Francis Lloyd did. He didn't demand that Mary Victorin reads a hardcore evolutionary book, but he pointed him to thermatology. We are now, we don't really like the idea of separate domains of science and faith. But that was something which Mary Victorin seemed to espouse. Using science to do our object lessons and the spiritual lessons is something we can learn from the early scientist people of faith in Quebec province. And regretfully, we see a shrinking domain of religion. As the 20th century progressed, faith became less and less important, and perhaps the emphasis on science made it made that more likely. And now I don't need to show this one. That's an evidence of it. I have to thank Centre du Soir de Saint-Jacques for the picture of Abbé Bourque, and my esteemed colleague Pastor Geddes told me about André Laurendeau, whom I hadn't heard about before. Albert Laurendeau, right? So thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Charles. Do you have any questions? Yeah, Colby.
I was just wondering if you could, I don't know if this is something you could speak to, but the difference between the Catholic and the Protestant response in 19th century Canada to evolutionary theory?
I think that the Roman Catholics emphasized a lot more the traditions of the Church and writings of the popes. But they also, we sometimes think, no, they never let the people read the Bible. Well, people like Cromanchet, in his journal, quoted extensively from the scriptures. And one of his articles quoted the full Genesis account, 1:1-2:4, and commented on it. So they did address the scriptures, but they also drew attention to the writings of the church fathers and the popes. And Laurendeau took pains to link his thoughts to teachings of Pope Leo XIII. But in general, there wasn't really that much difference, I would think.
Any other questions?
Do you know when the Pontifical Academy of Sciences was founded? Was that after this era, wasn't it? Or do you know?
There didn't seem to be references to it, so the answer is I don't. I haven't looked that up. Okay. It's the Pontifical Academy of Sciences.
Okay. Okay. If not, we thank you again, Charles.